obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
My name's Melissa. And I'm a very, very grateful member of Al-Anon, and I love alcoholics, so thank you. Thank you for asking me to be here. So there's my new friend, Fred, alcoholic, right? No wonder I already love him. And I'm grateful that he came all the way from Minnesota to be here and support his daughter. What a blessing for both of them. Okay, so as our speaker last night, DJ, I see him back there in the back of the room. He says, here we go, right? So here we go. I came into Al-Anon 15 years ago, unwillingly. Prior to that, you know, I'm a Southern California girl raised in San Diego. Two kids in our family, my brother and I, and my dad was the drinker in the family. My brother and I are 4 years apart, and he struggled with his own stuff and moved out when he was 15 years old. My dad and him just couldn't get it together. So it left me there. So I became like this only child. My dad was a bar drinker. He didn't drink at home, so he was the bar drunk driver in the family. So he'd go to the bar, he would drive home, he would fumble into the house. He'd go to the bar, he'd drive home, and he'd fumble in the house. And my dad's way of raising children were, they were not to be seen nor heard. So you just existed in this home, and you just, I learned to stay under that radar, right? You come in stealth and you go out stealth. If you made any ruckus, then there was issues, right? I became very, very good at that. And what happens when you're raised in a home like that, you don't learn to communicate. You have no communication skills at all because nobody wants to hear what you have to say. So so I grew up, you know, not, you know, having anybody to talk to, dealing with this dad that, you know, he was a fun drunk, but he was just, you know, he was kind of scary. He was always, if he was drunk, he was always good to get money from, you know, so it was always, you know, that kind of thing. And I remember a few things growing up. It's one time I got up to go to school, and my dad was in the front yard sleeping on the lawn. And as my friends and I walked to school, that's kind of embarrassing. It's like, don't mind him, you know, and my mom, I'm looking at my mom, I'm like, you know, but, you know, so that was how that, you know, that was the family that I was raised in. They loved me, I knew that they loved me, but there was illness in our family. I didn't know that that was alcoholism at the time. That wasn't a word that ever was used in our house. It never was, you know, any of that. It just, alcoholism wasn't, that wasn't the issue, right? So so that was the younger me. And there wasn't a lot of chaos then, right? Because I just kind of lived under the radar. It was more when I started to go into teenagehood and become a young adult. When I was 15, I met a gentleman that was 20 years old, and let me back it up just a minute. I was dating a young man that I went to school with, and he rode a 10-speed because we were 15 years old, and then I met this other man that was 20 years old. He had a Porsche. So lo and behold, I got driven around in a Porsche, and the guy on the 10-speed, he just kind of went away. So here I am, I'm 15 years old. I'm you know, this is the love of my life. He's 20 years old, and he's introducing me to a life that I've never known, right? He's introducing me to a life that includes cocaine and drugs and just an array of life, right, in that arena. So I married him. He was the local, you know, coke dealer in our area. And and I found myself in places that most people don't like to be. But I was young, and it was intriguing. It was exciting. It was all those things, because I didn't, you know, I just thought that's what you do, right? That's what you do. You go to the drug dealers, you get the pound of coke, and you take it home, and you spend the rest of the night helping your, you know, your guy put it together, weigh it out, and get it ready for the weekend. So that's what we did. We always had people coming in and out. We had lots of friends, so that's how I grew up, right? And you're right, Anne. This is like we're in an earthquake here. Yeah. The ground is moving today. So we got married when I was 19, and at the height of everything, right? Everything was going strong. And I had a baby right away at 20. And when that baby girl was born, this little girl was born into my life. I was 20 years old. I look at this child, I bring her home, and I'm like, holy crap, how am I going to raise a baby in this kind of environment? So I never thought of myself to be in this environment, but once I had her, I thought, I need to make a change. I have to do something here, you know? So a little bit of time goes by, and the marriage kind of went south, and I took this little baby girl with just the clothes that we had, and I moved home. And, you know, I tried to maybe try to salvage that marriage. I don't even know if I really tried hard to salvage that marriage. He went into recovery shortly after we separated, and I tried the Al-Anon thing, but I'm 20 years old going into Al-Anon. It was kind of weird. I remember going, it was a hospital environment. It was Al-Anon in this back room. I walked in the back room, and I swear the ladies in there were 150 years old. And I'm listening to them, and they're whining. And I'm like, I got stuff to do. You know, I got this little baby I'm taking care of. I don't have time for this. You know, I got this life I gotta put together. So that was the first introduction to Al-Anon, and the last for a while. I walked away from that. He stayed in recovery. He's got about 30 years, you know, today, you know, around this time is about 30 years. So he's stayed there. So I'm very grateful for that he's, you know, a sober member today. So that little girl and I began our journey of raising each other, because that's what we did. You know, I was a baby having a baby. So we're raising each other. And, you know, life kind of happened in between, and I got a little wild because I was, you know, only 15 when I met this guy, and now I'm 21, I can go to the bars, and I had a baby week on, week off, you know what I mean? So on the week offs, I would go play, and I would go play hard. And so that lasted about, I don't know, maybe a year or so, and then back to mom and dad's house I went. I was in debt, and didn't do really good as being a mature adult. How many of us are mature after that reading today? Anybody? So I moved home, back to the house, back to dad, you know, back in that environment, and now I have this little baby. So I'm living at home, I'm not happy, trying to save what I can, trying to get out of debt, trying to get out of there so I can get into my own apartment with this little baby. And I'm watching the relationship with my daughter and my dad. It's the same thing. The same thing is with me and him, with her and him. So now I have this little baby that can't play. She can't go be a baby. She can't. So I said, I got to get out of this house, right? So I have a friend that I have known for many, many years, and I called him, and we ran into each other somehow, some way at the house I was living in. So we got reconnected. It was that guy on that 10-speed. So we reconnected at that time, and I moved home, and we talked a lot, and so he kind of challenged me to, you know, save harder, and, you know, just kind of encouraged me to get myself together and be able to move out with my daughter. So within about a year, I was able to do that. I moved into a little apartment up in El Cajon on El Cajon Boulevard, where the hookers hang out. So, but I was proud of this little apartment. You know, it's just me and her, and I was so proud of it. And my friend came down, and he helped me move, and we had this little place. Her and I had our little room, and then my friend on the 10-speed said that, you know, we'd been seeing each other here and there, and he said he wanted to take this little friendship to the next level. Well, I thought of him more as like my brother, you know, like my friend, like, and it was real. I was like, that's kind of weird, right? So we saw each other for a little while, and then I decided, why not? I'll take a chance, right? We'll see where this goes. Well, that guy on the 10-speed is my husband sitting next to me. So the good guy always wins in the end, right? And the reason why this hotel is so special to me is over 25 years ago, he proposed to me in that bar out there. I was working something here, and we were at a, I don't know, he was beating me here, and we sat on the bar and drank ourselves and had a great time, and he whipped out this ring, said, marry me, and I moved to Orange County, and we've been here ever since. So... but backing that up, so he says, you know, we're going to take this relationship to the next level, which we did, and I had no idea what I was in for, right? We've known each other since we were 15 years old. We met in the 7th grade, and I knew him. You know, he didn't have any secrets. I didn't have any secrets. We knew each other. So we took this ride together, and we got married about 6 months after that proposal in Las Vegas at High Noon. And we had a great wedding. All our friends came out, and it was really fun. And we got pregnant right away, because I told them, I said, yeah, it takes a while to get pregnant, you know. And I was pregnant the first weekend, right? So here he was thrust into fatherhood, you know, really fast. Everything was like fast for us, you know. So here we have this little baby boy, you know, 9 months after we get married, and, you know, he's drinking. We, you know, prior to that, that's what, you know, we partied a lot together. That's what we did. We drank together. We just did a lot of stuff together. And that was our pastime, right? And so now these babies are coming in, and it's time to settle down. How many of you have asked your husbands or other halves, okay, the kids are here, it's time to stop? I see lots of smiles, right? So I was ready. I was ready to raise those kids and stop and do what we need to do. He wasn't ready, right? So we're married, but we're going this way, right? Our marriage is going this way. You know, I'm taking up with the kids, and we're this way, and he's, you know, he's finding new drinking friends, and, you know, staying at work longer, and I got to be at work, I got to drink, because it's part of work, and it's part of the business, and it's, you know, it's part of it, it always came home with something, right? Then the not coming home starts, right? The not coming home, where you sit up, and you worry, and you got the highway patrol on speed dial and hospitals on speed dial. You know, are they alive? You know, are they alive? Because he stopped calling to tell me because he got tired of listening to me. He got tired of me bitching at him, so he just stopped calling so he would just stay out. So, you know, so now we have this, these, we have these two beautiful kids. My husband's going this way, I'm going that way, but somehow we were making it work, right? We were just kind of making it work. We lived under the same house, but, you know, I would take the kids camping and he would stay home, and I would go here and he would stay home. And it just kind of worked for us. I didn't have to deal with him being drunk, and I could just go do what I did. So that worked for a while. Then we started our own business, and so we started our own business out of our home. We had one more baby, so, you know, in the midst of this, you know, let's throw some more kids in there, right? So now we have three kids. We have this brand new business that we're trying to take off the ground, and his office is down the road, and I'm home, and I'm home with this baby, and now he's never home because he's there, because he has to be there because his business happens over the night. So it's always, you know, it's always gone. So a couple years go by, and I'm noticing everything, there's like a shift. There's a shift in the way his behavior is, there's a shift in my behavior, and we were really at other ends of the, at the other ends of the world. So I remember getting up one morning. I was getting ready to go on a walk with a girlfriend, put my tennis shoes on, just the same thing I've always done, get my tennis shoes on, get my, you know, jogging whatever stuff on. I go to put the kids in the stroller, and I put some lip gloss on. Just a little lip gloss. That's all I did. And that was the beginning of the end. Lip gloss. Be careful with it. So this lip gloss was very powerful. It created this environment. I don't know. It did something to his brain. So I could feel this tension, right? There was tension. And so he just comes to me and he says, "Who are you seeing?" I said, "Well, I'm going walking with Suzanne." "No, really, who are you seeing?" "So I'm going walking with Suzanne." So this happened for months and months, and it got worse and worse and worse. This constant, badgering that I was having this affair. So I'm like, yeah, because I have time for that with three kids, you know, little kids, and I have time for that. So, but it was really getting serious. This was a serious accusation, and it was becoming a real ugly thing in our house. It became very, very ugly. His attitude was, it was becoming like vicious. It was vicious. And we've never had any kind of hostility in our home or anything. We had the family disease of alcoholism, right? So this little baby of ours is getting ready to turn one. Our marriage is a wreck. I have this accusation flying all around. And I'm planning this one-year-old birthday party for our entire family. You know, those one-year-old birthdays where you have like 800 people, you got the jump house, you got the food, you know, and you suit up and you show up and the kids look great, you look great, the house looks great, you know, but everything is not great, right? The whole inside of you and your husband, everything's a mess, right? So that day was just brutal. It was brutal. So I have all these people coming. He's not in his right mind. He's in the corner of the yard smoking and drinking whiskey on his own. That's not like him, right? But I got too much focus, too much going on where I can't focus on it. It's probably better that he was over there. So the video cameras are flying. Everything's going, you know, everything happens. The little baby gets his cake and, you know, everything just goes in order, right? Then the party ends, the guests are leaving, and my friend, Linda, who's here today, she's been my friend forever, thank you, Linda, for coming, she's taking my kids out the door, right? Nobody said anything to me, I didn't pack a bag, nobody prearranged that with Mom, right? I'm like, where are you guys going with my kids? She goes, well, she says, Augie said, you know, he wanted to talk to you after the party. We're taking your kids. All right, okay. So it's her husband, love them, known them forever. So the kids all go off with Auntie Linda and Uncle Durkee. So the doors close, everybody's gone. My husband has red eyes. They're red, they're vicious, and I've never seen him look like this. And he came right to me, and he says, we're going to get to the bottom of this, and you're going to tell me what you've been doing, and we're not leaving this house until that happens. And I, for the first time in my life, was scared of my husband. I've never been scared of him in my life. I've known him forever, but he wasn't the husband that I married. He was not that person. That person was gone. And then stood in front of me was a maniac, someone that had literally lost their brain, just lost their mind. So he shoved me. I was up against the wall, just looking at him, and he's yelling at me. And it was like a movie. It was like a movie. My eyes were moving throughout the kitchen, trying to see, where's my shoes? Where's my purse? How do I get out? How do I get out of this situation? What's going to happen? Because he's not normal. Something's wrong. So I couldn't see any shoes, but I did see my purse, and I screamed at him, and I was able to get out from underneath that, get my purse, get out the door, and go get my kids. Because that's what I needed to do. I needed to get to my kids and figure out, you know, what had just happened. So I go over there, and we're there, and her husband, it was dear friends, they're together, my husband and her husband, and he begins to tell me this big, long story of what his side, right? So I'm like, you know, I was like, something's wrong. You know, at this time, I didn't know what it all was, right? Something's wrong. Something has snapped in this man's brain, and something is wrong. I couldn't pinpoint it. So he's at home, I'm with them, I stay the night, and he's calling constantly, constantly, constantly. Well, what was happening is he had our house wiretapped. So my house was wiretapped up in the rafters because he wanted to know what I was doing. So a private investigator after me had my wire, you know, my house is wired, and you know, and the tapes are all at Linda's house. See, and there's nothing, right? There's nothing. So it's just, it's the insanity of this disease, right? The insanity of this disease, we're in it. We're in the mixes of it, right? So I'm going to back up like 2 weeks, and then I'm going to go right back to this. 2 weeks prior to that, he, you know, was still in this accusation phase, and he asked me if I would do a lie detector test. How many of you have done a lie detector test for your husbands when they ask you if you're having an affair? Nobody? Well, it's not that fun, let me tell you. So I sign up for this lie detector test, and I go, okay. So we go to the office, this guy shows up, I'm doing the lie detector test, and I'm thinking, what the hell? You know, what the hell am I doing? So I get through it, the guy comes out, he talks to Neil for a little bit, he goes, your wife's fine, you know, she's passed with flying colors, blah, 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 blah. He goes, okay, thank you very much, blah, blah, blah. Gives him a check, and off he goes. So we're at like one of those counselors or something, and the counselor says to Neil, he goes, for some reason, I don't think that's good enough for you, that lie detector test is going to be good enough for you. So he goes, oh, yeah. Well, it wasn't good enough for him, right? So now we're back at this phase, you know, where it's the middle of the night. I'm at Linda's house with the kids. He's at home up in the rafters, you know, trying to figure out if I've rewired the house so that I can figure out what he's doing or cross his wires or something. And I'm like, wow, he thinks I'm pretty smart, right? That I can get up there and rewire the whole house. And So my husband's bottom was in the attic. That was his bottom. So it's like 3 o'clock in the morning or something. We're at Linda's. He's calling constantly. And the night goes through, and I'm sitting out in the backyard smoking because I used to smoke, and you know, and I'm smoke, is thinking, you know, life's going to change tomorrow. I got to get up and I got to find an apartment for myself and my three kids. I got to find a job. I gotta. My head was just like, you know, just go. But you know, I'm a survivor, and I was ready for that. I was ready for that challenge, right? Because I don't know what the hell happened with him. He had flipped his lid, and I needed to go a different direction, right? So I was really set in my heart that I was just going to walk away from this, that there was nothing I could do. I didn't know what happened to him. And it didn't dawn on me, you know, that it was, you know, that it was this disease, that this disease we were in the trenches with this disease. And so that morning, the wee hours of the morning, we're sitting on the couch, Linda and I and her husband, and the kids are all sleeping, and I hear this knock at the door.
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
So she answers the door, and there's my husband, and he looks at us and he says, "You know what? I'm sick and I need help. I'm sick and I need help." So what do you say to that? You know, what do you say to that? You know, I could have shut the door, you know, but something in my heart just said, you know what? He's sick and he needs help, you know? So it's like, what do I do? You know, what do I do with this guy? You know, what do you do with somebody that says they're sick and they need help? I didn't have any experience. I didn't know anybody, didn't know anything. So he came in, he's sitting on the couch. Linda and I are talking. We're trying to figure it out. And I'm like, we're just going to go to Coco's. That's all I knew to do. So I take my husband by the hand, and him and I, we go to Coco's. Coco's will make it all better. We'll have some pancakes and coffee, and we'll be okay. So I get him in a booth, and I'm like, okay, just stay here. I'm going to go make a call. That's when they had telephone books at the telephone booths outside. So the yellow pages, I'm looking in the yellow pages like, okay, so what do I look under? You know? So I don't know. Somehow I got this place right down the road, and I called them and they said, bring them down. So I brought them down, and we're sitting in these rooms with this lady, and she's asking us all these questions. And I'm like, you know, she like knew all these questions about my husband. I was like, do you know him? And long story short, my husband was suffering from paranoid delusions as a result of alcohol and crystal meth. So I knew about the alcohol, the crystal, the whatever that stuff is. I had no idea. And so that's what was causing all of this stuff. So she goes, and we can help him. I was like, great. So we're sitting in this room, and they says, well, he's going to have to go upstairs for a while, all the way to the top floor. But while they do that, he's sitting on the couch. He's broken, right? He's at the bottom. They're taking his shoelaces. They're taking his belt. And I'm like, oh, what have I done? What have I done to this man? They're taking all of his things. You know, he's not like a criminal or something, right? And I'm like, maybe I should just take him home, right? But I didn't. Something in my heart said, just let him go. So I let him go, and off he went upstairs, and I thought, okay, I just need to go home and take a little nap, right? So I was like, I felt so alone, and the only person I knew to call was my ex-husband, because he was in Alcoholics Anonymous at the time. I called him and I told him what was going on, and he talked to me for the longest time, and he you know, just kind of walked me through the upcoming days and what was going to happen and how it was going to happen, and I didn't feel alone anymore, and I thought, wow, that's pretty cool. So I get, you know, I'm done talking to him, and I go to lay my head down, and my phone rings, and it's him. He goes, I'm out, come pick me up. I go, it's only been like 2 hours. So something in my heart said, okay, I'm going to go pick him up, but he can't come home. He can't come home. We cannot do this anymore. Something has to change. So I thought, where do you put him? Where can we put him? We put him in the Irvine Marriott. That's where he went. He went to the Irvine Marriott. He gets room service. He gets all this stuff while he's suffering, right? But he did the outpatient, so he's going to outpatient, right, at this place, living at the Irvine Marriott, and then he eventually comes home, right? So he comes home, and we're living on this little cloud because my husband's in recovery, and we're not going to have to deal with this anymore, and blah, 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 and I'm not in Al-Anon yet. See, I haven't come into Al-Anon yet, so my husband's coming home, and he's telling me about his steps, and he's bringing home all these papers, and so I get out the little binder, and I start tabbing it, putting his steps in there, and because he's a good student, right? He's going to be a good student, and he's going to go every night with his little binder with his steps. So that's what he did. He was a good student. He graduated from that little thing. I went to his little graduation. He got his little chip and went to family night. We did all this stuff, right? But it just kind of wore off. That wore off. He started, we went this different direction again. But he was going up. Instead of us going sideways, he was going up. He was getting recovery. He was getting all this stuff. And I was down here. So we were again separated, right? But this time it was a different separation. This time it was a separation with resentment and anger and hostility, and it was all me. It wasn't him, right? He was full of love, and he was full of spirituality. He was full of crap, as far as I could see. But that's what I saw, right? I saw this man come home. All of a sudden, we went from 1 week in the attic doing this, and then we come home to this spiritual. I was like, wow. It's like, how does that happen? You know, is that for real? And I was like, nah, you know. So it took me a while to come into the same place he was and really believe that this program was bringing him in a direction that, you know, he was going up and it was for real, right? But I couldn't go on the journey with him. It wasn't like I could just hang on to his coattail and go, because it was his journey, right? So I started, like I said, I started building these resentments because I was like, who does he think he is all of a sudden, right? He wants to be dad. He wants to help with grocery shopping. He wants to help with taking care of the kids. He wants to make beds. It's like, what happened to my husband, right? Those were my roles. He was stepping into my turf. And that wasn't okay with me. You know, that was my stuff. That's what made me who I was. So his journey began there, and, you know, he just kind of soared, right? And my journey just took a lot longer, you know? I just was so full of, you know, this, like, look, ick, right? So he lovingly suggested that I try Al-Anon. And when you hear that from the person that you love, you know, and they're doing so well, he might as well have been telling me to, you know, go take a hike and, you know, jump in a lake, right? I just couldn't hear it from him. You know, every time he said it was like, it was like pouring acid on me. And it was horrible. So, but my pain wasn't great enough yet. My pain wasn't great enough to go seek a solution. So months kept going by, and we, you know, we were just going this way, you know, and finally, I remember standing in my garage. I felt so alone, so broken, so disconnected from everything. You know, I'm normally uplifting. I got it together. You know, I felt disconnected from my kids, from him, from life. I just felt deep and dark. And so he suggested one more time, you know, why don't you try it? I said, okay, all right. So I found this little meeting down in Mission Viejo, and I walked into this meeting, And it was big, a lot of people, a lot of girls, a lot of men. It was just like, wow. And I heard these people, you know, share from their guts, right? They were sharing their stories, and I was sitting in the back row just doing this, you know, just doing that Al-Anon head bob. You know, I connected. But by the end of the meeting, I was so emotionally just emotionally clogged that I just would leave the meeting to just go cry all the way home because I didn't know what to do with what I was feeling, because I was feeling everybody, right? Everybody that they shared, I was like, oh, I get that. Yeah, I have that. I did that. Blah, blah. And it was just like sit right here in the middle of my throat, right? And so for a couple of months, I did that. And then I just said, screw this. This is too painful. This is too much. I'm feeling worse coming to these meetings than I am, you know, than what I believe it's supposed to happen. So I said, I'm not going back there. So I didn't. I didn't go back for a while. Life didn't get any better. It got harder. Our relationship was just in the tanks, right? And I just remember again out in that garage, just emotionally broken, just disconnected from life, and thought, okay, I'm going to go try that damn meeting again. So I go to that meeting. And there's a lady there, and it's after the meeting, and she goes, kid, where you been? And I'm like, looking, you know, is she talking to me, you know? And I don't even remember talking to people when I had been there before, but she did, you know, and she remembered talking to me. And she says, it's good to have you back here. We're going on a women's retreat on Thursday. You want to go? And I was like, And I didn't know anybody. I didn't even know her. So something in my heart said, say yes. You know, say yes. You'll get a break. You'll get a break from everything that's happening at home. So I called him. He was on a trip. He'd already been in Alcoholics Anonymous 2 years, right? So I call him. I go, hey, you know, I met this lady. She wants me to go camping. He goes, where are you going? Where do I drop you? And how, what day? So if any of you are back here or here from, you know, that you know about O'Neill Park, he drops me off at O'Neill Park with my little suitcase. I know nobody. I'm standing there and he drives off and I went, oh. So here I go and I walk in. I see this lady and she says, you know, welcome, you know, blah, blah, blah. She introduces me to my roommate. I'm in a tent with this lady I don't know. And I just like, oh my God, what have I done? I'm like nervous. I don't know what's happening. I don't know about this Al-Anon thing. And now I'm camping with 36 women. And so that weekend was the most incredible weekend of my life, of my life. These women, they shared from the deepest trenches of this disease. They shared it. They loved me like they'd know me forever. You know, they just brought me in, and I was one of the girls, right? We did chores, we walked, we shared, we laughed and laughed until my stomach muscles, that's the greatest workout is laughter. So I was hooked. Right, I was hooked. I asked this woman to be my sponsor, and she's my sponsor today, and I'm so grateful for her. You know, I've been blessed to just have one sponsor and one sponsor only. So, and she has just been, you know, God gave her to me. You know, when I didn't know what God was giving me, He gave her to me. And he gave me all these women in this program that, you know, also took me under their wings. And I'm forever grateful for that. So this journey of my program, my recovery, began that weekend. I shared with these ladies and let them know what was happening with me. And they laughed and they laughed. And I thought, this is pretty serious. Why are you guys laughing? My life's a wreck. And they're like, ah, you know. But you know, that's the healing process, right? I just didn't know it at the time. So So I got my sponsor, and my husband comes to pick me up. We didn't say any words, and, you know, too much words. And but he knew I had gotten the hook, right, the Al-Anon hook. He didn't have to say anything. I didn't have to say anything. And our life was still in shambles, but I think he knew at that moment, you know, it was going to be okay. It was going to be okay. And Alcoholics Anonymous allowed my husband to turn me over to God. You know, he allowed, you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, for him to heal and to help him heal, he had to let me go, right? He had to let me go. So my journey, you know, continues, and I start working the steps with my sponsor. And boy, not easy. That's not easy. It's not easy to know, you know, peel back those layers and know that, you know, you're not as great as a person as you thought you were. I had a lot of stuff I had to deal with, and it wasn't just him, right? It wasn't just him. It was all the years before. It was the upbringing with my dad. It was the ex-husband, and then partly him. So it was all these things that I had to come to terms with, and I had to, you know, just kind of accept and move on and deal with. So that's what I did. I took direction from my sponsor, and I did what my sponsor said. And the only time I've ever said no to anything that she said was when she asked me to be the luncheon speaker today. But when she said that, she goes, "You said no?" So I start working those steps, and then about halfway through the steps, this young lady asked me to be her sponsor, and I'm like, "Oh, wait." So I couldn't let her know right away. I had to call my sponsor and say, "This girl wants me to be her sponsor. Am I ready to be a sponsor?" You know, I'm all freaked out, right? And she goes, "Well, yes, you're ready to be her sponsor. Say yes." So I did. And, you know, that young lady is here today too, somewhere. Where is she? Miss Donna. So she's here today, and we grew up together. You know, we grew up together. That, you know, I practiced on Donna. And, you know, that journey is incredible in itself, you know, the whole sponsorship thing, because that's just another layer of recovery, right? Just one more layer of recovery is sponsoring other women in this program. And it made me know that my past has not gone wasted, right? It lets me know that the things that I've been through in my life can help other people. And that's a blessing. So my recovery is happening. My marriage is still, you know, broken, and he's asked to speak at this, I don't know, somewhere he's asked to speak, and I couldn't go. And I thought, dang, I can't go, because I want to hear what he's going to say about me, right? But God made it impossible for me to go, but they taped it. They taped it. So I get home, and I go, "Where's the tape?" Right? I didn't have enough recovery in me yet, you know, so I'm still, you know, bitching at him, and every night, "Where's the tape? Where's the tape? Where's the tape? Where's the tape?" And he wouldn't want to give me the tape, so then I knew he talked about me, right? And I knew it wasn't good. So finally, about 2 months after that taping, he gave me the tape, and it was on a Monday night, my home group night. So I finished dinner, did the dishes, got the tape, got my car, and drove to my Monday night meeting. And I listened to that tape, and I listened to my husband share his story, and it was his story. It didn't have nothing to do with me. I heard my husband's, you know, take and his story about what it was like for him, you know. And it, even though I'd known this man for 15 years, I didn't know his insides. You know, I heard his insides in that tape, you know, and that little, you know, my heart was so hard that listening to that tape just kind of, you know, cracked that armor. You know, just kind of cracked it just enough to where things started moving, right? Just enough. I remember walking into that Monday night meeting, after listening to that tape, parking, and at the end of that tape, it said that my husband says, you know, he was thankful for Alcoholics Anonymous. He'd learned that, you know, he had to turn his life over to God, his will over to God, and his wife over to God. And I'm like, wow. And what that did for me, it said that I was now part of the problem. You know, I heard it like that. I thought, uh-oh, I'm part of the problem. You know, it's not just him. I'm part of this mess that we're living in, right? So I go into that meeting. I'm crying. I share in that story. And that was the true beginning of, you know, my spiritual awakening. My spiritual awakening was that night. I wish I had the date, but I don't remember the date. And so my journey in this program just, you know, started there. I was open. You know, somebody was sharing, I think it was Jonathan last night, you could see, you know, trees in a different light. You know, the colors are more vibrant. Life is more vibrant. You see butterflies. You just see things differently. And that was happening to me. And as I recovered, our marriage started to kind of blend back together, right? It just kind of healed itself, you know? He stayed out of my way. I got some new tools to work on with him. And it just kind of started meshing, right? Everything just started meshing together. And so about, I don't know, 3 or 4 years into the program, then we kind of started doing things together in this recovery. We started coming to this convention together. We do the banquet together. We go to meetings together. We've spoke together a couple of times. You know, I go to watch him speak, and I'm so grateful. I am so grateful, because where else can you go to get that? You know, where else can you recover from this, you know, disease of alcoholism and addiction, and, you know, and just coming to these conventions and going to these meetings, and you know, it's just a wonderful thing. So our marriage is better. You know, we have recovery in our home. We're raising our kids now in a recovery environment. That little baby that, you know, we started with, he just turned 18. So, you know, our kids grow up with this. They've never come into these rooms, you know, but they know about it. They know about it through us. And thank goodness, because raising kids is not easy. You know, it's not easy. Each one of our kids have had their own trials and life happening. And I've been able to, you know, come into these rooms and raise my kids, right? I raise them with the women that have already done this, right? You know, and when things happen, you know, you have someone to call and say, my kids are meh, right? And they're like, okay, you know, okay, we've been here, we've done this, and we just raised our kids together, right? We've been through, you know, my husband and I, we've just been through a lot, you know, just these last couple of years with this life. You know, somebody said it the other day, you know, we have struggles every day, but it's life, right? Life just happens. And we've had a lot of life happening, you know, but we do it together. You know, we do it together today, him and I. And I'm very, very grateful for that. There isn't much now that we're separated on, you know. I mean, we're not perfect, you know. We still have our stuff, but you know, it's great. We have a lot of AA family. We have a lot of Al-Anon sisters today, and all of them are here. You know, this morning I'm coming down the elevator, and I am so overwhelmed with love. I've been crying all morning. I've been because all the texts coming in, all the love. It's like I'm just like, wow. You know, this is like crazy. And so I'm walking in, and I'm telling one of the girls, I was like, I just feel like so overwhelmed, and just keep everywhere I turn, I'm just getting love, love, love. She goes, it's like a love train, and I was like, exactly. And I'm like, because that's what this is all about, right? It's all about love. In the end, it's all about love. And I know that that's why him and I are still here today, you know, because our core is love. It's all the stuff that messes us up in between, right? It's all the stuff that messes up in between. So, you know, and it's the same thing with my higher power. You know, I didn't have a higher power coming into this deal. You know, I was my higher power. That was it for me. You know what I mean? And because that was all that I had to rely on, you know, growing up, was just me. I believed in me. I trusted only me. And that was it. So coming in here and them telling me that, okay, you can take a break now. It's not about you. You know, you can rely on this power greater than yourself. You're like, what the hell? Well, what the hell's that, right? That's too big. It was too big for me. So I had to break it down a little bit. So I had to break it down to where I could see it. So you guys were my higher power. I had to be able to put a face to it, right? So that's how I had to do that in the beginning, was just to rely on you. And wow, I was blessed in so many ways by doing that. And then it just kind of evolved from there, right? And we have this God in our lives today that is just incredible. And we tune into it, and we don't miss it, and we don't walk away from it, and we're constantly feeding it. We're constantly feeding it. Because if we don't, then we just kind of go off step, right? We go off step, and I am a much better person if I'm in tune. So those of you out there, if you haven't worked your steps, work them. Don't sit and don't wait, you know, because that's what's going to clear, that's going to clear that in between you and your higher power. Right? That you got to get rid of all that muck to get, you know, get to the good stuff, because the good stuff is worth it. The good stuff is totally worth it. You know, it doesn't mean that life is going to be perfect, because life is always going to throw you a curveball. I've got so many curveballs, I can't imagine. But you know what? I've gotten pretty good at catching them. I've gotten really good at catching them. And I'm so blessed to have everybody, each and every one of you in my lives. And the women that I, you know, have come to just be with in this program and that are here today, I see all their little faces here and their spouses and then the men too, you know, it's just, my life is full, very full. And I'm very, very blessed to be here. I thank you for allowing me to take your time up this afternoon. And I hope you all have a wonderful rest of the convention. And I heard somebody say at the end of their speech the other day, I think it was next year's chairman, Cynthia, you know, when you leave here today, grab a newcomer, give them a hug, give them some love, you know, take them to a meeting, and just show them what we're all about. Just show them the love. Thank you.
Enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.